This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga, and here's what's coming up.
It's an unprecedented amount of attention and diplomacy going towards Africa, more than we've ever seen from a previous U.S. administration.
That's Cameron Hudson of the Center for Strategic International Studies on next week's three-nation trip to Africa by Vice President Kamala Harris, the fifth visit to the continent this year by high-ranking officials. Also, damaged critical infrastructure from Cyclone Freddy remains significant in Malawi. And Cameroon and Gabon step up border security after Equatorial Guinea confirms the Marburg virus is spreading. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Vice President Kamala Harris will become the highest-ranking Biden administration official to visit the African continent when she begins a tour of Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia next week. Her office says she will work on strengthening partnerships, security, and economic prosperity, and analysts say her mere presence as the first female vice president who has ancestral ties to the continent is significant in itself. VOA's Anita Paul, who will be traveling with the vice president, reports from Washington.
After a wave of visits this year to the African continent by top U.S. officials, Vice President Kamala Harris steps up next. The White House says this builds on the administration's progress since last year's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, where President Joe Biden pledged to work to strengthen ties with the continent. Cameron Hudson is an analyst and consultant on African peace, security, and governance issues at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
She's the fifth senior-level U.S. official to go to Africa. She will have covered with her colleagues nearly a quarter of the countries in Africa with personal visits just in the last 3 months. So it's an unprecedented amount of attention and diplomacy going towards Africa, more than we've ever seen from a previous U.S. administration. So I think that's the significance of it.
And Harris, the highest-ranking elected woman in U.S. history, will also meet with the continent's only female head of state, Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan. The White House says Harris will speak with the elected leaders of all three countries about their commitment to democracy, a way, Hudson says, that Washington can distinguish itself.
There are also all countries that have a very substantial relationship with China on the trade front, the investment front, and now increasingly on the debt front. So, you know, this is a place where Washington can come and really advocate for the kind of democratic values and try to shore up those values and partnerships with countries that, like many other African countries, are, you know, working with a variety of powers.
Harris is expected to press African nations, many of which abstained from condemning Russia's invasion of Ukraine during United Nations vote, to acknowledge Russia's aggression. VOA asked National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby if the vice president would raise human rights concerns on her trip.
The vice president will, of course, raise human rights concerns everywhere she goes. That's part and parcel of American leadership around the world. We're not afraid. In fact, it's a sign of how much we care about other nations and partnerships that we are able and willing to have those kinds of conversations.
And democracy campaigners say they'd like to see her push democracy as well. David Carroll is director of the Democracy Program at the Carter Center, the foundation of former U.S. President Jimmy Carter.
It's important that the high-level attention is brought to this issue, and I think the fact that the vice president and others, other senior leaders, will be deeply involved in these events around the globe and in Zambia is very good, and it's important, and it's important to show that commitment and that sincerity and also the sincerity of purpose, and that's where, you know, it links back again to being able to be honest about where we need to address our own shortfalls.
And Harris wraps some family history into this visit. Her maternal grandfather, an Indian diplomat, worked with Zambia's first post-independence leader. Nearly 60 years later, his granddaughter, the most powerful woman to hold office in the U.S., and first South Asian and Black woman to rise to such heights, will meet with Zambia's president. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Earlier, I spoke with Kwaku Nuama, professor of African studies at American University here in Washington, D.C., about the vice president's visit to Africa.
I think it's a welcome trip, and I think that this is going to be important both for Africa, but also for the vice president herself. She's starting off nice and easy in friendly places like Ghana, where she's going to have a chance to display understanding of the cultural aspects of the relationship, but also deal with some of the more substantive issues that the United States is trying to work in the Africa relationship. I think that this would be to be fantastic for the relationship, but as I said, also for her own career.
So what do you make of her choice of nations to visit? Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia?
So these are the easy places to visit for an American politician. These are countries that are relatively stable, that have working democracies, that don't have any serious controversial issues that she may be asked to comment on. So, but these are also countries that are allied with the United States in the broader international issues of the moment. And so this is really places where she'll find friendly audiences. So it's a good place to start.
The Tanzanian president was here and met the vice president. And incidentally, she's also a woman, a lady. Quite interesting choice of the country.
Yes, and that's very good. Unfortunately, we don't have too many women leaders in Africa. So this is fantastic. I'm glad that she's there. I'm very proud of the work that she's done. And the vice president rightfully is going to go there to highlight that relationship, but also show in a demonstrative manner that women can be leaders. Africa needs to make room for women to join the leadership ranks. And we're lucky to have one in Tanzania and the vice president herself. As a woman politician in the United States, she has her own record that's always been debated. And I think that standing with another female politician, it's a fantastic way of showing what women can do.
Interesting. Also, Zambia was visited by the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and Kamala Harris will be going there too.
Yeah, Zambia is also very important, especially at a time when African countries are dealing with all manners of economic hardships. Zambia is dealing with some of the debt crisis that we've seen on the continent. Zambia is also a flashpoint for Africa's relationship with China right now. But immediately, the United States is dealing with China and Russia, essentially making inroads in Africa. And I think that when you go on a trip like this, you want to reassure your allies, but you also want to win new allies. So Zambia, Ghana, Tanzania, these are countries that surround the United States. They are more complicated relationships with places like Nigeria, South Africa, for example, and of course, in the entire Sahel, we see Russia making major inroads in there. So some of those places are places where you face more controversy and more challenges, and she's not going to those places. But as I said, you don't abandon your allies. You go with the people that stand with you, and then later on, you try to win some other people to your side.
Cameroon and Gabon have stepped up border security after neighboring Equatorial Guinea confirmed the spreading Marburg virus has killed at least 9 people. Despite the controls, people are still traveling across the porous borders, raising fears the virus could spread. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Kiosi, Cameroon, on the border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea.
Scores of children sing at the government primary school in Kiosi that regular hand washing protects people from diseases. Kiosi is a town on Cameroon's southern border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. Mireille Ivan is the head teacher of the school. Ivan says more than 15 children from Equatorial Guinea attended classes in Kiosi on Friday. She says all the children were separated from their Cameroonian peers and obliged to wash their hands before attending classes. Ivan said Cameroon's public health ministry officials informed her that movement across the border was restricted because of an outbreak of the Marburg virus in Equatorial Guinea. Cameroon's ministries of basic and secondary education say that several hundred children cross every day from Kientem, an administrative unit in Equatorial Guinea, to study in Kiosi alongside scores of children from Gabon. Also, several hundred merchants cross borders to Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and Cameroon each day to conduct business, according to CEMAC, a regional economic bloc. Authorities in Equatorial Guinea say the Marburg outbreak has killed 9 people, but the World Health Organization says the death toll may be as high as 20. Cameroon's public health ministry said Friday that it had held discussions with health officials in Gabon and Equatorial Guinea on ways to stop or reduce the spread of the disease. Félix Ngelengele is the governor of Cameroon's south region where Kiosi is located. He says surveillance and travel restrictions have been reinforced along the borders.
What we can assure the population is that the surveillance system has been activated. Health staff are mobilized, and even the administrative authorities at the border are equally mobilized to monitor that disease. We want to thank the World Health Organization and the Red Cross that have joined us to see to it that the disease should not cross the border and enter our country.
However, Ngeli said the porous borders make it difficult for Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea police to fully control the movement of people. On February 14, Cameroon's health ministry reported 2 suspected cases of Marburg virus in the country after a first deadly attack in neighboring Equatorial Guinea. Gabon's state broadcaster RTG on Friday reported that after a second Marburg outbreak in Equatorial Guinea in less than 2 months, the government of Gabon reinforced its contingency plan of zero contamination of Marburg virus disease. RTG reported Libreville has also dispatched a team of technicians to identify an isolation area for possible suspected cases in border areas. Cameroon and Gabon say civilians should avoid contact with animals and people who have traveled to Equatorial Guinea and make sure people with fever, fatigue and blood-stained vomit and diarrhea are isolated. The WHO says Marburg is transmitted to people from fruit bats, spreads among people through bodily fluids, and has a fatality rate of up to 88%. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kiosi, Southern Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, says roads, bridges and critical infrastructure remain significantly damaged a full week after Cyclone Freddy battered southern Malawi. Rasmani Kabori, MSF's emergency coordinator in Malawi, tells VOA's Caravan Dam that torrential rains caused landslides, mudslides and flash floods that engulfed entire villages, and tens of thousands of people have been left without access to health care.
After Cyclone Freddy started in Blantyre to take care of patients in supporting Queen Elizabeth Hospital to take care of wounded patients and everything. Following that, we made assessment in the southern part also, a town that called Falombe, and we are now settling an OPD clinic where we are seeing severe cases, and even this morning, we managed to refer 3 patients by helicopter back to Queen Hospital.
About how many people are cut off from healthcare in Malawi by the cyclone?
If you take the southern part, we have like 7 districts that are affected. And from the government side, there are around 500,000 population that are displaced. And those people, first, they cannot afford to go to afford us health system. In addition to those people that are staying in the community, that they are counting more than a million people that are cut off because of lack of funding to access a health system. And aside, we have some people also that have money, but the health system are not anymore existing because they are completely damaged. And in total, we have talking around more than 2 to 3 million people that cannot access a healthcare system anymore.
Wow. Well, when you're talking about those high numbers, that hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, how do you reach them? How does MSF, the doctors and other healthcare workers, how do they get to them?
The government have put in place some system, helicopters, and soon we have some other actors like UN agency who are also going to bring in some helicopter. But aside, MSF especially, we used to sometimes to reach a place where we are walking with our bags and drugs up to 10 kilometers to meet people to provide care to them.
With some of these bridges and roads being damaged, heavily damaged, has that posed a big problem to, you know, the MSF workers like yourself?
Most of the time, you know, when access is not easy, is affecting all of us because we cannot even bring supplies like medical supply and logistic supply to the needed people. But for now, we are a little bit, we are more concerned about it, but we are using some means of transportation like motorbike or boat that we can reach some places, but it's not easy to reach. And up to now, there are still several places that we couldn't access properly.
That's Rasmane Kabore, MSF Emergency Coordinator in Malawi. He was speaking with my colleague, Caravan Dam, from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says the latest initiative by the UN Special Envoy to Libya may be a path forward to elections for a legitimate government, adding, in his words, our diplomats are deeply engaged in that. The UN Envoy, Abdoulaye Bathile, offered the initiative to set up a steering committee of major Libyan figures to adapt a roadmap to enable elections that are seen as the path to resolving years of conflict. El Abouni, director of MENA programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, discussed the required conditions for the initiative to succeed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi.
Well, I don't think any of this is a major breakthrough. What was announced as the new constitutional basis or legal basis by the House of Representatives is something that happened several times before. There were different declarations and agreements, etc. But I think very few are actually seeing the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is that there is a huge level of mistrust among the Libyans, no matter to what part of Libya they belong to. And there is a very strong disagreement between the major regional powers who are involved in Libya's politics. And unless these two issues are addressed, you can form as many committees as you want. You can publish statements about legal basis and elections or whatever. This will not resolve the problem. These are the two issues that need to be worked on. The initiative of the Special Representative Secretary General, Mr. Bathili, could be a step in the right direction, but it's not sufficient by itself. So, yes, forming kind of a steering committee that involves the major political players in Libya is important because this could be a platform where you can help them rebuild a minimum of confidence and trust that is a requirement for elections, because with this level of mistrust, it's very likely that the results of the elections will not be accepted by all parties, and it will lead to another division similar to what happened in 2014. So forming this kind of steering committee, whatever you want to call it, is not the problem. The name is not the problem, is an important step. However, the focus of this committee should be trust building rather than discussing the technicalities of elections.
What experts said, without an agreement between Egypt and Turkey, it might be difficult, if not impossible, to adopt any plan for elections in Libya. What's your take on that?
The other element that is needed for the success of this initiative is to ensure that there is a regional buy-in for this work, which is something that has not been confirmed yet. We know that the Egyptians so far have expressed their objections about proceeding with elections in the current conditions. So Egypt has some demands that it considers as important for the viability of any political process. We know that the disagreement between the Turks and the Egyptians continue to basically block any meaningful solution in Libya. So the SRSG will have to also do some sort of shuttle diplomacy between Egypt, Turkey, UAE, France, Italy, and other countries to make sure that there is a minimum of buy-in among these countries that would support any agreement that the Libyans may reach. Of course, I do think that any political solution in Libya will have to be led by Libyans. It has to be a Libya-led process, as I said. But we cannot deny the fact that regional powers and some other European countries have a lot of influence, and they have very clear agendas in Libya that need to be also taken into consideration. So to summarize again, my answer is that internally, domestically, I think building trust is important rather than discussing technicalities of elections. And the second one is making sure there is a regional and international buy-in, some sort of a Berlin process 2.0.
That was Eli Abuan, Director of MENA Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi. Tanzanian authorities say the pilots of a passenger plane that crashed into Lake Victoria in November failed to heed warnings from an automatic alarm system. The accident killed 19 of 39 passengers and 4 crew members on the flight of Precision Air from Dar es Salaam to the northwestern city of Bukoba. According to the French news agency AFP, the Transport Ministry says an enhanced ground proximity warning system issued 3 alerts about the excessively high descent rate. Authorities say rather than take corrective action, the flight crew pushed the control column into a nose down position. They said the plane was trying to land in bad weather and poor visibility. Italy's foreign minister says Europe risks seeing tens of thousands of migrants from North Africa if economic aid is not granted to Tunisia soon. According to Reuters, Antonio Tajani said today he has proposed that the European Union split bailout funds into installments, with the first payment available immediately, followed by others linked to economic reforms. The UN says at least 12,000 of those who have reached Italy this year set sail from Tunisia, compared with 1,300 during the same period last year. In total, Italy has received 20,000 boat migrants so far in 2023.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 202-258-3076.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impogo in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yebro, and our engineer, Cornelius Turner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.